The Woodlands Project, Part 4. What was learned as a result of the Woodlands Project? This part of the report presents the results of the Woodlands Project. The results will be discussed in two sections. 1. What was learned from the interviews and documents? 2. What was learned from other research and meetings? Section 1. What was learned from the interviews and documents? A. The review of need-to-know records. The review of the need-to-know records showed that the most common issue was physical abuse of residents. Some of the documents indicated that the abuse was caused by staff, but in many others the documents did not say whether the abuser was a staff person, another resident, or someone else. Sometimes the document did not say that there was abuse, but it referred to an unusual or severe injury to a resident, or that a resident had died. Allegations of physical abuse included humiliation of residents, slapping or hitting residents, beatings, bathwater temperatures that were too hot or too cold, and isolation. The next most common issue was staffing levels at Woodlands. This meant that there were concerns about whether there were enough staff members for the number of residents. Some of the issues that are related to staffing levels included neglect, resident behavior, and the use of restraints and sedatives. Sexual abuse was mentioned in the documents, but not as commonly as physical abuse. Files referred to residents being treated for sexually transmitted diseases, residents reporting being sexually abused, and residents being sterilized. Other issues referred to in the documents included overcrowding, use of medication and restraints, how residents were disciplined or punished, emotional abuse, and loss of family contact. Other issues referred to in the documents included overcrowding, use of medication and restraints, how residents were disciplined or punished, emotional abuse, and loss of family contact. Section 1B. The interviews with former residents showed that most of the people interviewed did not like living at Woodlands. Some of the reasons that they didn't like Woodlands included missing their families and feeling like they had no freedom. The interviews with the residents helped the Woodlands Project team to put the documents from the Need to Know in context. Their stories sometimes confirmed what was in the documents and also provided information about other incidents. Stories that were told by the former residents included physical abuse, such as being slapped or beaten, sexual abuse by staff or by other residents, having to work on the wards or for other businesses, being confined in side rooms or placed in restraints and losing their privileges. Residents talked about being afraid to speak up for fear that they would be punished. They also spoke of the fear of watching or hearing another resident be abused. Some of the residents described how scary it was to live on a ward where they felt that the other residents were dangerous. For some former residents, this interview was the first time they had told anyone about their experiences at Woodlands. These interviews reveal that the events that took place at Woodlands continue to have a strong effect on people's lives. The interviews were very helpful for the Woodlands Project team to learn about the structure of Woodlands, as well as which wards were the most difficult to live on. When it was time to look at the residents' files, the interviews were very helpful as a place to start from. Section 1C. The review of the individual resident files showed that the Woodlands Project team reviewed approximately 100,000 pages of resident files. Nearly 20% of the documents revealed at least one issue of concern. These issues ranged from actual reports of abuse, unexplained injuries or illnesses, unexpected behavior changes, sexually transmitted diseases, sterilization, and the use of birth control in Woodlands, heavy doses of medication, overcrowding, chronic infectious diseases like hepatitis and salmonella, forms of punishment including seclusion, restraints, restricted visits with family and withdrawal of food and privileges, like being able to have coffee or go out on the grounds alone. The most common issue in the documents was physical harm to the residents. This was present in about 10% of the documents that contained issues. Sometimes it was clear that this was the result of abuse, but often all that was described was an injury ranging from broken bones or teeth to bruises and cuts. The Woodlands Project team also noted documents that mentioned punishment, restraints, and abuse investigations in this group. About 5% of the documents that contained issues referred to sexual issues. Sometimes it was clear that there was abuse of residents, but more often there were descriptions of sexually transmitted diseases or genital injuries. In a few cases, it was well known by staff that residents were sexually involved with each other or with non-residents in the community. It was not clear whether there had been any investigation of whether the sexual relationships were consensual. Another 5% of documents that had issues of concern were related to institutional issues like overcrowding, staffing levels, Woodlands policy, lack of privacy, poor quality beds and other furniture, poor building maintenance, and lack of fire safety. In general, the resident files were consistent with the experiences at Woodlands that residents talked about during the interviews. Because the Woodlands Project did not have access to all information about former residents' lives, either because documents don't exist or weren't provided, we cannot say for sure that those former residents whose files showed no evidence of abuse or harm did not suffer abuse. Part 4, Section 2. What was learned from other research and meetings? The project team did other research about Woodlands and about the needs of the former residents. The information collected about Woodlands from newspapers, libraries, and BC Archive, and reports from studies done, showed how the institution was run and what some of the concerns were that were expressed over the year. They can be broken down into four categories. Category A, institutions. First, institutions were designed to control the residents. Second, institutions were restrictive by design. Third, abuse is more likely to occur in institutions than in community settings. Lastly, the Supreme Court of Canada recently said that it is reasonably foreseeable that some people, if left in charge of children in difficult or overcrowded circumstances, will use excessive physical and verbal discipline. It is also reasonably foreseeable that some people will take advantage of the complete dependence of children in their care and will sexually abuse them. BKL et al. Versus British Columbia, 2003, SCC 51. Category B, Woodlands. First, Woodlands was a product of the discriminatory way people thought about people with disabilities at the time the institutions operated. Second, Woodlands was overcrowded and was under constant pressure to take more residents. Third, reports of abuse were common throughout the history of Woodlands. Lastly, reports from the 1930s onward found that Woodlands was overcrowded, poorly staffed, poorly funded, physically hazardous, operated on a medical rather than a social model, and was overly reliant on restraints and behavior controls rather than rehabilitation and community living. Category C, effects of trauma on adults with intellectual disabilities. First, all people, including adults with multiple and complex disabilities, can suffer from long-term effects of abuse. Some experts sometimes used to think that people with severe disabilities did not feel pain or experience trauma. Second, trauma from abuse can have a negative effect on a person's development and can result in antisocial behavior like aggression. Third, people with intellectual disabilities can benefit from support and counseling. Lastly, support staff can benefit from education about trauma and ways to support victims of abuse. Category D, evidence given by adults with intellectual disabilities. First, adults with intellectual disabilities need special help and support when they tell their stories or testify in court in order to reduce the effect of the fear of people in authority produced by institutional living. Second, it should not be assumed that adults with intellectual disabilities can't or don't tell the truth. Third, there is ongoing research into the quality of eyewitness evidence given by adults with intellectual disabilities. Fourth, research shows that adults with intellectual disabilities have equally good abilities to recall historical events compared to adults without intellectual disabilities. Lastly, research shows that in some cases, adults with intellectual disabilities are better historians of institutional life than staff people or documents and records.